Hey everyone, it's Naomi Wolf, and I'm here at Daily Cloud as promised with this week in Congress. And I'm going to be talking today about some bills that are surprising. Well, every time we read what's going on in Congress, it's surprising. But what we've got today is the Equal Rights Amendment is being the deadline is being extended for it. So there's been an effort to have an Equal Rights Amendment since the middle of the 1970s, and it keeps not passing. That's Mushroom's duck, in case you're wondering. That's Mushroom. He's a very popular dog on these videos. And here, I'm going to do this. And what we've seen is that people support the ERA and they want the ERA, but for reasons that are kind of unclear but depressing, it just doesn't pass. Why would America still want to discriminate against women in this day and age? But women in Congress have not given up, and their supporters have not given up. So there is a push to extend the deadline, and that passed the House. And I'll read to you the actual resolution. And the other really interesting thing is that there's a bill to give help to Puerto Rico. Of course, Puerto Rico has been battered by horrible natural disasters. And periodically, bills pass that, usually through FEMA, that get emergency help to Puerto Rico. So this has turned into a really huge political football. Why is that? You would think it's not an issue. Puerto Ricans are Americans. It is a protectorate of the United States, or a territory, rather, of the United States. Puerto Rico is part of the United States. This is our history. It's our reality. Puerto Ricans are Americans. But over and over again, Puerto Rico is left out when it comes to assistance in bills that really you can only call kind of racist. Because, for instance, at Daily Cloud, back when there was the most horrible hurricane in Puerto Rico a year and a half ago, but also bad flooding in Louisiana and in Texas, the FEMA bill at that time helped Louisiana and it helped Texas, but it refused to help Puerto Rico. So Daily Cloud members started a campaign to get Puerto Rico added to the FEMA bill. At that time, Representative Frelinghuysen, who is a member of Congress, Republican from New Jersey, was in charge of what happened with FEMA. So a number of New Jerseyites lobbied him using Bill Cam, using the FEMA bill, and got him to announce that he was changing the wording of the FEMA bill, and that in fact he was going to added Puerto Rico to the FEMA bill, and he actually announced that very proudly on his website subsequently. So the lesson to you is that citizen lobbying really, really works. So what we're going to do just now is look at what happened in Congress, and we're going to tell you more about these two bills, and we're going to tell you what you can do if you really want to support or oppose one of these bills. So this week in Congress, we've also got a really important bill, which is it made it to the Senate. And that's really interesting because, of course, the Senate is Republican controlled. And what that bill does is that it gives the power to declare war back to Congress, especially regarding Iran. So we've talked about this here at Daily Cloud. That's a really incredibly important kind of power struggle going on right now. A lot of people don't really understand, I mean, the learning about what is democracy and how it works, what is American democracy and how it works, has been so corrupted that a lot of people no longer really know who does what, you know, when it comes to war, for instance. So in our American system, we remind people over and over and over at Daily Cloud, Congress declares war, right? You do not get to have a war just because you're president and you decide to have a war. Our founders gave only Congress what are called war powers. So this measure is, commentators are saying, almost certainly going to face a presidential veto, but it's really worth paying attention to because people who follow these things closely point out that it's a rebuke, and it's a rebuke by the Senate of the president's use of military force. So the GOP-led Senate adopted a resolution 2 days ago on Thursday that would restrict the president's power, deny it to use military action against Iran. And it was Representative Tim Kaine of Virginia who sponsored this bill. And it has bipartisan support, as you can imagine. And 8 Republicans are joining the Democrats that are supporting this resolution. And again, those of you who listen to us here at Daily Cloud, a resolution isn't a law. A resolution is a sense of the governing body of the United States. It's a kind of a message. It's what our leaders are saying we believe in. It's a communication, right? And it doesn't really have the force of a law, but it is certainly showing the world, this is what the Senate believes, and this is the way the wind is blowing. And so the resolution reads, Kaine said on the Senate floor, we should not be at war with Iran unless Congress votes to authorize such a war. And the case they're using here is Iran, because some people feel that President Trump has used military action against Iran in a kind of politicized way. And certainly Congress didn't vote for military, and the Senate didn't vote for military action against Iran. So the sponsor said we shouldn't be at war with Iran unless Congress votes to authorize such a war. While the president does and must always have the ability to defend the United States from imminent attack, the executive power to initiate war stops there. And he said this should not be a controversial proposition. And again, if you know how the United States is supposed to work, it's not a controversial proposition. It's how our business is supposed to be conducted, right? It's the rules of our company. It's like, it's what our board decided in 1776 or earlier, rather. But we're in a time, of course, and this is nonpartisan, but we're in a time where kind of on both sides, but certainly in this case, even Republicans are rebuking their own president for this. There's a complete erosion. It's like the chessboard is being thrown up in the air. And there's an erosion of the normal checks and balances and the normal institutional processes. And that's very, very dangerous, as I've been saying since 2008. And it's not just on the right. I was concerned, this is a bit of a detour, but I was concerned when after one of the primaries, there was a drumbeat of talking points from Democrats saying, let's get rid of the caucus in Iowa. So, the caucus in Iowa is a really important part of our democratic processes. And it's scary. It's a scary time. People should be worrying and paying attention in any country when elected officials start to say, let's just change the rules, especially if they are the rules of democracy that has obtained for, over 200 years. So there are processes to change the rules. For instance, if you want to change the Constitution, you hold a constitutional convention, right? If you want to change the caucuses, gosh, I would have to look at what that involves. But it's worrying when there's a kind of opinion campaign mounted to just change the rules, kind of in a departure from established procedures. And so that's what Trump has done, really, by well, many things, obviously, but by unilaterally rattling a sword of war against Iran, and specifically an airstrike that killed Iranian General Qasem Soleimani in January. And there was, of course, a retaliatory strike from Iran against two Iraqi bases where U.S. troops were situated. This is all supposed to be Congress's doing, right? And congressional oversight, congressional review. And this was on their plate some time ago before the impeachment trial kind of occupied them and derailed this kind of legislation. So this is kind of legislation that was, or a resolution that was put on hold and they had been discussing before the impeachment trial. Just a note, you know, everyone on the left wanted the impeachment trial to proceed. Many people on the right did not. One thing, since our focus is democracy, that an impeachment trial does do is really halt the work of the Senate in other, you know, legislative capacities for the duration of that trial. And Congress, too, to some extent. So this is an example of that. So also last month, the House voted on a similar bill. I think we covered it. The texts of the resolutions are different. So, you know, this could really be agreed to by the House and the Senate, and or, you know, resolutions against the president unilaterally declaring war should could be agreed to by the people we elected to represent us. And then it'll go to Trump's desk and he's very likely, of course, to veto it because it takes away power from him. We're in, like, I don't mean to get really like deep and philosophical this early into the video, but you really have to understand where we're at with a resolution like this. The resolution, it's like if you have a business and you go into partnership with three people, right? And one of the people, and you all agree to sit on a board and, you know, vote on things and there are checks and balances. And one of the people just takes home all the profits that are in the cash register and doesn't give it to you. So, or doesn't share it out according to the, you know, the guidelines of the board or according to the partnership agreement. This resolution is literally like the other two people in the partnership in the business writing to the third person and saying, you really need to do what we all agreed to and what our lawyers signed off on when we created our initial partnership agreement. And then if the president vetoes this, it's really like that third, you know, owner of or partner in a business saying, I don't care. I'm burning up the partnership agreement. It's not worth the paper it's printed on. And I'm going to keep taking home the profits every day or whatever it is, whatever the assets are and the procedures are of the business. You know, I'm going to move my family into store. I'm going to sell off all the furnishings of the business. I'm going to torch it to the ground, right? It's really like not partisan, but that's really what this argument is. It's like, do we have a partnership? Look, our founders created it. It's in our constitution. This is our body of law. This is the House and the Senate. This is how it works. And if the president vetoes this one, which is really just saying, don't take all the stuff, third partner from the store, it belongs to all three of us. There was a system we worked out long ago for sharing these profits and, or, you know, who does what in the business. It's really, really, really the third partner saying, I don't care. You have no power. And the reason I'm saying this is that I always think, and I've said this many times before, I always think of that moment in when Mussolini marched on Parliament in Italy. And for a while, the legislators kept legislating. They didn't understand that it was over. They didn't understand. And there were brown shirts standing in Parliament, right? They didn't understand that it was a vestigial house. And that moment has always fascinated me because the human mind has denial. Of course, you know, the first thing people say when they're told someone you love has died is no, right? So this bill is kind of a no. And it's really amazing that Republican senators are resolving this or you know, appear to be about to resolve it. I want to read you the actual text. But what it really is not, you know, not really understanding that if the guy has already ignored war powers and already declared war effectively, and is going to veto this letter to the third partner saying, remember our agreement, remember that all the lawyers signed off on it, remember that, you know, we all agreed and we have a board agreement and we have bylaws and we have a way that we all agreed the business would work and it's legally enshrined. This is literally the third partner torching that agreement. And I don't mean to repeat, but I really, really just want you to understand, right? Sometimes these bills that we read they seem kind of arcane or they seem like not very important. But this is so, so, so important. I'm just wanting you to see Mushroom, because while we're talking about very dire things, that is a happy sight, a 14-year-old dog who's very comfortable. So I really want to go now to the actual text of the resolution, okay? Because it's like the death knell to democracy. And again, we're nonpartisan. So this is in the Senate of the United States. It's super short. It's different from the one in the House that we looked at. And it's a joint resolution to direct the removal of United States armed forces from hostilities against the Islamic Republic of Iran that have not been authorized by Congress. Section one, Congress makes the following findings. So again, when we learn to read bills, they're often broken out at, or resolutions like this is into findings or into sections. The first section is findings, and the second section is about ending hostilities. So Congress has, so again, they're restating, right? Like, it's like, I keep saying, it's like holding up the agreement that the business has. One, Congress has the sole power to declare war under Article 1, Section 8, Clause 11 of the United States Constitution. I mean, can you believe that Republican senators have to say that? Everybody knows that. Everyone in Congress knows that. That is like one of the top five most important things that the Constitution calls for. And one of the first or second most important things you know when you're a United States representative or a senator. Two, Congress has not yet declared war upon nor enacted a specific statutory authorization for use of military force against the Islamic Republic of Iran. The 2001 authorization for use of military force, so I'm so sorry, against the perpetrators of the 9/11 attack and authorization for use of military force, I should turn that off, pardon me. Against the perpetrators of the 9/11 attack, and the authorization of the use of military force against Iraq resolution of 2002 do not serve as specific statutory authorization for the use of force against Iran. So what does that mean? The AUMF, which they're referring to from 2001, kind of gave a lot of leeway to the president in the wake of 9/11 to attack people back without Congress declaring war. And so they're saying here extraordinarily, right, because so much violence has been done by the AUMF. The senators are saying, okay, yes, we invaded a bunch of countries using this. We sent special forces to engage in dirty wars all over the world using the AUMF, but enough already. In this case, we're not giving you the right to do that. It is, listen to how they say it, do not serve as a specific statutory authorization for the use of force against Iran. They're saying it's not a law. Three, the conflict between the United States and the Islamic Republic of Iran constitutes, within the meaning of Section 4 of the War Resolutions, War Powers Resolution, either hostilities or a situation where imminent involvement in hostilities is clearly indicated by the circumstances into which United States armed forces have been introduced. So they're saying what's going on here doesn't call for war under the War Powers Resolution. They point out that the War Powers Resolution states that, quote, at any time the United States Armed Forces are engaged in hostilities outside the territory of the U.S., its possessions and territories without a declaration of war or specific statutory authorization, such forces shall be removed by the president if the Congress so directs. If the Congress so directs, all right? So they're kind of scolding the president. Five. And they say Section 8 of the War Powers Resolution defines the introduction of the U.S. Armed Forces to include, quote, the assignment of members of such armed forces to command, coordinate, participate in the movement of, or accompany the regular or irregular forces of any foreign country or government when such military forces are engaged or there exists an imminent threat that such forces will become engaged in hostilities. So again, they're saying there is a War Powers Resolution which says when we're supposed to declare war, we can't just declare war anywhere we want, no matter where we want, and the president certainly can't unilaterally, and U.S. armed forces aren't facing an imminent threat. The United States armed forces have been introduced into hostilities as defined by the War Powers Resolution against Iran. And the question of whether United States forces should be engaged in hostilities against Iran should be answered following a full briefing to Congress and the American public of the issues at stake, a public debate in Congress, and a congressional vote as contemplated by the Constitution. So the patriot in me wants to stand up and cheer. This is amazing. This is extraordinary. These are Republican senators who are saying, who are risking a lot. They're going against their own president, who is a president who likes to threaten people. And they're saying, if we're going to go to war, if we're going to risk American young men and women in the field of danger, the American public have to have a debate and there has to be a full briefing to Congress. Extraordinary, as contemplated by the Constitution. They could not be clearer. This is not legalese. This is remember what the Constitution says. You are stealing this power to understand a threat and to authorize war from the people's representatives. And they're basically saying you are being a dictator. I mean, I don't know how to say it any more clearly. It's not my words. These are the Republican senators in this resolution. Section 1013 of the Department of State Authorization Act, fiscal years 84 and 85, provides that any joint resolution or bill to require the removal of U.S. armed forces engaged in hostilities without a declaration of war or specific statutory authorization shall be considered in accordance with the expedited procedures of Section 601 of the International Security and Arms Export Control Act of 1976. So that's saying even if you send forces to engage in hostilities without a declaration of war, you have to consider it in accordance with this clause of another act, which kind of governs sending people into harm's way. So it's basically saying again, yes, we know we created these loopholes to fight dirty wars that Congress didn't authorize, but you can't even use the loophole. You have gone too far, right? And then section two, termination of the use of United States forces for hostilities against the Islamic Republic of Iran. Termination. Pursuant to section 1013 of the Department of State Authorization Act, fiscal years 84 and 85, and in accordance with the provisions of Section 601 of the International Security Assistance and Arms Export Control Act, 76, Congress hereby directs the President to terminate the use of United States armed forces for hostilities against the Islamic Republic of Iran or any part of its government or military unless explicitly authorized by a declaration of war or specific authorization for use of military force against Iran. And then finally, rules of construction, nothing in this section shall be construed to prevent the United States from defending itself from imminent attack. So that's a lawyerly add-on to say, we are beating the drum as hard as we can. If someone's about to drop a gigantic nuclear bomb on us, forget all of the above, we'll defend ourselves. But apart from that final caveat, this could not be, and I cannot say it enough, I wish I had an emoji, like, this is huge, it's amazing. It is the most forceful rebuke, really, that you can imagine, super clear, from a Republican Senate to a Republican president, involving the use of force. And that is This Week in Congress. So, hey, Eileen, we've got some people chiming in. I'm glad to see you all. Thank you so much for your support of Daily Cloud. So what I want to also turn us to while we're looking at the week that passed and the week ahead is I promise to give you guys some takeaways and make it kind of usable, the things that we're doing at Daily Cloud in your daily lives. So I want to leave you with a couple of thoughts about investment and an announcement. And I'll start with the announcement. The announcement is, I'm so excited, that because of incredible demand from readers and viewers in Australia, because we've been covering Australia since the terrible fire, brush fires that they've been having and the environmental crisis that they're facing. But we have an amazing team of volunteers in Australia, and they've put together Daily Cloud Australia along with our team, wonderful Erica Goldman and wonderful, all of our friends, Paul Stewart at ARC Interactive and the team at Daily Cloud. And so you'll see if you go to Daily Cloud that there are incredible stories about Australia, which is really, it's clear, a test run for how to kill a democracy that I'm quite sure is going to be rolled out when they're invading there for the rest of us. So we've got amazing stories right now. There's a great piece by Christian Brown, a graduate student, an Australian graduate student, on a bill that ends the separation of church and state in Australia. Very scary. There's some incredible reporting on protecting wildlife. There's an essay coming up by Sue Arnold about how koalas are being endangered by development after the brush fire. I think it's very suspicious that the brush fires seem to have followed paths that allow for development of already proposed projects, such as a lot of housing developments, a lot of fracking, a lot of pipelines, and a lot of wood pellet extraction. But that's another blog that will and video that we'll do for Daily Cloud Australia. But I just want to cheer them on and celebrate them. And I want to thank our Patreon members and our new members and remind you, please, every week we run, we have to scramble to meet our fixed hosting and data costs. And we do have people we pay, even though we're on a shoestring. It to be sustainable, if you believe in the mission of reading the bills and explaining the bills and giving people the power to pass their own laws, please become a member. It's super cheap for a lot of you who can afford it. It's $3.99. And if you can't afford it, tell someone else to become a member, please. And we have an amazing new capability, which is BillCam 3.0. which lets you enter, it's such a fantastic tool for if you're in an advocacy group, meaning like if you do work for any issue, if you're a candidate, if you're a journalist, if you're an investor, or just a citizen who wants to stay informed, or if you're in real estate, if you're in finance, you can now for $24.99, which yes is more expensive, but this is a professional offering, it's a vertical. You can enter, like, tell me all about mortgages. And then every time a bill that has to do with mortgages changes, or is introduced, you get notification of the actual bill cam in your email. So you can act on it, you can lobby for it, you can send it to your social media, you know, bill about reproductive rights if you are fighting for reproductive rights, a bill about energy if you're in the clean energy sector. It's a fantastic offering. So tell your friends, let people know. It took us so much work and so much fundraising to launch it. So please, please, please try it out. It will blow your mind. And we also have the capability now, if you want to advertise and get the word out about the issue or the business or the bill or the advocacy group that you belong to, we can upload your video or your blog right into a sponsored content site, right on the bill. It will completely amaze you. It's a dream I've had for 8 years. I've worked night and day along with some other very dedicated, talented people to get this done. And it's finally done, and it's really so powerful. So please go take a look and talk to us, contact us. If you wanna put your group's video right on a bill that you want to opine about, and we'll get it out there onto social media. And so now I want to give you what I promised, which is a few tips about what I would invest in if I were, you know, since I read the bills every week. So again, this is a little more practically oriented, a little less about pure altruistic, we want to save democracy, but you're entitled to be sitting at the table where the decisions are made when it comes to investment. And one thing we started Daily Cloud for is so that everybody, and not just insiders, can know what to invest in and other forms of, you know, powerful knowledge. So now that I've read the bills, let's take just the last 6 months. There are so many bills that have passed or are in the pipeline about renewables. And I've talked about this before, but it has only ramped up. There's a turning away from especially coal and fossil fuels among investors and institutional investors. And legislation is following that because it means the coal lobby is getting weaker and weaker. So for instance, the model bill that we shared talk about a lot is California's, which mandates completely renewable energy by 2050 and a renewable grid. So if I were you, I would invest in, and I don't get paid for any of this, I don't take commissions. This is pure wisdom. Okay. I do bank at Amalgamated because it's a B Corp, but they and some other, but they don't pay me. They and some other banks and investment houses have started fossil fuel free portfolios. So if I were you, and again, you know, it's investment recommendations, take it with a huge grain of salt. Don't, you know, this is just my best understanding based on the bills. So based on the bills, I'm not going to say if I were you, based on the bills, a fossil-free portfolio would be a good bet, considering that many, many, many states are mandating a transition away from fossil fuels, and specifically portfolios that are heavily invested in solar and battery storage. So now let me go on to something else. There is a federal bill that will restrict single-use plastics. And the UN is doing a big thing on single-use plastics this week, which means that there's going to be model legislation in the EU and all over the world. And actually, Africa has led, countries in Africa have led the charge on banning single-use plastics. So what would I take away from that? It's time to really invest in companies that produce alternative packaging or sustainable packaging, whether it's bamboo-based, whether it's hemp-based, whether it's, you know, cardboard that can be easily recycled, whether it's paper products from sustainable forests. That is going to be big, 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 big as more and more legislation, including a federal bill that we've read that we're going to report on, is going to ban single-use plastics. And cities across the country are passing legislation to ban single-use plastics. So people have to, you know, transport things in something. So there's going to be a huge explosion in alternative ways to package, you know, and you heard it here first. I would also look at developments that use a smaller footprint or cities that are rezoning to allow units like in their backyard. Portland has done this and it's hugely successful and it really boosts real estate values. And you can understand why. If you've got a traditional single family house, like on Long Island, you know, post-war house with on an acre or half an acre, you only can make the money from that house if you, say, are lucky enough to rent it out and live somewhere else. However, when a city rezones to allow these secondary units in the backyard or on the same plot of land, people are being extremely creative in the cities that have done this with these second structures. They do what are called mother-in-law units. They put mom in the backyard. They build above the garage a second story. Or tiny homes are huge. And if I don't know how you invest in tiny homes, but I predict that that sector is going to keep growing and growing and growing because people are just crushed with debt. And I was interested in tiny homes years ago because I knew they would be huge because people just are, you know, cannot bear these payments for so much space. You know, they work 3/4 of their working lives to just pay the mortgage. That is unsustainable. So it was totally predictable that tiny homes would take off. So by the same token, if you've got a house in a neighborhood like this, you can put a tiny home in your yard, and a lot of people are Airbnb-ing that. And Airbnb, of course, is a huge industry, which is just going to grow and grow and grow because it monetizes something people are doing anyway, which is taking care of their homes. And it monetizes people's labor of doing something that they know how to do, which is hosting. So I am seeing a lot of rezoning in a lot of younger families not wanting to live in the suburbs. They're going back to inner cities. They're reclaiming. If I were investing, I would invest in real estate that will be rezoned in the inner city. How do you find out? You follow the zoning laws in your city. It's super boring. We'll help you. But for instance, I've mentioned Portland. I know that here in the South Bronx, there's been rezoning. There's so much of it happening. It's difficult to list all the cities where it's happening, but what's happening is industrial neighborhoods or brownfields neighborhoods are being reclaimed and then rezoned for this more dense kind of development. Another thing that's being built is a new structure where there are like apartments on top and retail on the bottom. And that's considered much more sustainable, much more desirable. People like it, younger generations like it, it's more walkable, it's healthier. So if I were a real estate investor, I would no longer be investing in single family suburban homes that you have to drive to. I would be investing in areas that have rezoned for greater density and are reclaiming neighborhoods. And we're seeing so much local legislation to do that. And increasingly, we're going to see federal legislation to do that as well, as more and more cities are understanding that being walkable is critical for people's health and for economic vitality and for safety and security. Usually zoning is not a federal issue, it's a local issue, but I wanted to call attention to that because a lot of you are investing, you know, on a local level and not only in industries that are affected by federal legislation. So those are my takeaways. Again, if I were investing, it would be, as I mentioned, packaging that is renewable, solar, and densely revitalized inner urban core housing. Oh, Philadelphia is another city that's doing this sort of thing. So that's it. It's almost 40 minutes. We've covered a lot of ground. I'm really happy to see you. Mushroom is happy to see you, though he's napping. There he is. Mushroom, say hi to the audience. This is Naomi Wolf. We looked at the War Powers Resolution passed in the Senate. We looked at the fact that the ERA is being extended, and we talked about what to invest in, and we celebrated Daily Clout Australia. Remember, subscribe, become a member. We are growing, but we need you. Enjoy the amazing renovated Belcam and tell your friends about the incredible opportunity to advertise on an actual live bill and send it through social media, or to have a vertical that tells you automatically in your inbox what everything you need to know about your sector. It's incredible. I'm so happy. With that, let's save democracy. Mushroom and I are saying have a great Saturday night, Sunday morning, tomorrow, wonderful week, and we'll see you very soon. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.